And we are back with another episode of the Kyle Anzalone Show. And I am very happy today to have on the great Captain Matt Ho, absolutely brilliant and courageous man. Matt, welcome back to the show. How are you doing today?
I'm good, Kyle. All things considered, right? You know, but I'm well. And thank you for having me back on. It's good to see you.
Absolutely. I'm very happy I have you on today, as I said, because there's so much happening in the world and it's a lot to break down. And you are one of my favorite people to watch, you know, whether you're on with Judge Napolitano or any of the other shows or following you on your Substack to hear what you have to say, because you have such great insights on all these issues. So, Matt, a lot to talk about today. I want to start off with the EFPs. Is it worth the price? Kushner and Witkoff, and what's the point of the war anyways? So starting off here, you have this article from your Substack last week. We republished it at antiwar.com. They are still lying about Iraq. And what you do in this article is you break down the lie about the EFPs. And I remember this from when I was a kid, Matt. They would say, you know, IEDs are bad, but we could defend against those. And those were made in Iraq and other places and were all over the place. But the EFPs, these were really, really bad. They really did a lot of damage to our soldiers. And they were specifically coming from Iran. And this was the Iranian involvement in the Iraq war. Now, why is all this relevant now? It seems that one of the only coherent-ish explanations that the administration could come up with for why we're currently at war with Iran is that Iran killed what was once hundreds, but now they sometimes say thousands of our soldiers during the Iraq war. Matt, I know you know all about this from firsthand experience, so please debunk the lie coming from the Trump administration.
Right. Thanks, Kyle. No, it's infuriating. I mean, they're using this lie that was presented during the Iraq war to justify a future war with Iran. And it's being used, as you said, as one of the few coherent explanations for why this war was launched. I just saw Condoleezza Rice give an interview, you know, George W. Bush's national security advisor and secretary of state, where she said that thousands of Americans were killed in Iraq by Iranian IEDs. You know, and to be clear, to start off this conversation, any blood that's on anyone's hands from that Iraq war, that blood is on the hands of the Americans that lied about the war, that starved the war, that sustained the war. So that blood is on Condoleezza Rice's hands. It's not on the Iranian hands. But this EFP hoax, and Scott Horton has always been so good on this. And I did an episode last week on Scott's show, as well as this is in Scott's book, Enough Already. He's got a whole section devoted to this EFP hoax. EFP stands for Explosive Foreign Penetrator. And you're absolutely correct with your description. They were incredibly deadly. They were very effective. And they were something that was used by the Shia resistance groups, the Shia insurgent forces against Americans. The Sunnis, who were responsible for about 85% of our casualties in Iraq, never used EFPs. If they did, it was, you know, once or twice, you know, statistically insignificant if they did. But the Shia forces did use these explosive foreign penetrators that would go right through our vehicle armor, and they were very deadly. And the lie about was that they were doing so either under the orders of the Iranians or that the Iranians were giving the Iraqis the EFPs to use. And that's just simply not true. The Iranians, you know, through their Quds force, you know, their expeditionary arm of the Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps, yes, they were in Iran and they were advising certain Shia groups, not all, but some, but their presence was very limited. And the Shia forces who were engaged in intra-Shia fighting with the Sunnis, as well as them fighting with the American and British and other occupiers, didn't need any push from the Iranians to attack us, to fight us, to kill us, right? It was about occupation for them, you know, let alone the idea that the Iraqis couldn't produce this weapon themselves. It's a relatively simple weapon. Anybody with the knowledge, you know, just the basic understanding of what they're trying to accomplish here and a half-decent machine shop can build explosively formed penetrators. The idea that they needed to be smuggled in from Iran because they are so sophisticated is just simply not true. And, you know, certainly refer to Scott Horton's book enough already. Go to my Substack, read my post. Scott's got his Substack post up about it as well. And there are lots and lots of people out there who debunked this at the time. So what you saw was the Washington Post, the New York Times, the LA Times in 2007, 2008, when the George Bush administration was presenting this EFP hoax as a rationale for war with Iran. It was so widely debunked, so widely dismissed, so widely exposed as a hoax that it was, that the Bush administration dropped it. And now here we are 20 some odd years later, and these people, because they're not competent liars like the Bush administration was, they're incompetent liars, are recycling the same failed lie in order to justify the war on Iran that Trump did get that Bush never could.
Yeah, it's really unbelievable, Matt, that they're trying to convince us that Iran has been at war with the United States for 47 years. I'm 35 years old, and I never considered myself at war with Iran other than the 12 days last June when the U.S. was bombing, and maybe on January, what was that, 2nd or 3rd of 2020, when the U.S. assassinated Qasem Soleimani. But yeah, it's not like the Iranians have been at offensive aggressive war against the United States. And if we're going back decades, I think the Iranians probably have more or better complaints about the U.S. support for Saddam Hussein, particularly using chemical weapons against Iranian soldiers. We know that the Americans provide the intelligence for that. So this whole 47-year war narrative seems completely absurd. Now, you do say something there that I find very interesting. I just want to follow up with you on a little bit, that this is an administration of incompetent liars, but it seems that everything's incompetent, the way they're waging this war, their excuse for going to war, their objectives from the war. They can't even clearly state what they hope to achieve. Donald Trump is saying unconditional surrender. I'm picking the next Iranian leader. Maybe it's okay if it's a Shia religious cleric after all. So, I mean, compare this to the Bush administration. What do you think about the propaganda we're receiving right now?
I mean, the only reason that the Bush administration or the Obama administration is technically worse, if we're going to qualify this, if we're going to be subjective about it, is because of the body count and because of the time that they had in office. But I think the Trump administration has it in them, right, to meet that. You're right, Kyle. They are incompetent across the board here. They started a war of choice for dubious, nebulous, vague reasons that when they do pronounce what the reasons are, they contradict one another, whether it be at the cabinet level or their proxies on cable television. It's a war of choice that had, on the weekend it started, according to a Reuters news survey, 27% support of the American public. It's a war of choice that they began knowing full well that the United States military is overextended, that its forces are that its forces are hollow, all its ships and planes are maintenance nightmares, its stocks of missiles, both offensive defensive, are minimal. Essentially, we have a defense industrial base that can't do anything but build planes and ships. There are maintenance nightmares, as well as can't keep up with the need for munitions. I mean, you know, so this decision to launch this war of choice, I think it comes to the idea that Donald Trump is the most malleable president we've ever had. This is certainly a war that people wanted George W. Bush to launch. This is a war that people put pressure on Barack Obama to consider. You know, Joe Biden his advisors, I think the issue with the Biden team was that they were consumed with supporting Israel's genocide in Gaza. And that's what the Israelis were consumed with as well. And that this scale of war wasn't going to be possible until that was finalized. But, what we have here is just a competence up and down. And we see it again today, where you now have the Iranians have closed the Straits of Hormuz, precipitating this incredible energy crisis that could deliver a worldwide depression, essentially. Yet the Iranians are still able to sell their oil at a premium now because of all this. I mean, it's just if you wrote a novel or a screenplay and this is what was going on it, you know, the publisher or the producer would get out of here. This is, no one's going to believe this, but here we are.
Yeah, absolutely. Matt, while we're on the topic of incompetence, I want to go, croissant number four. This is Trump talking about why he ended up in war with Iran.
Finding a hoodie that lasts through the season can be tough. The American Giant Classic Full Zip Hoodie is made to last year after year. Snag the hoodie that brings comfort for life. Save 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20 at checkout.
The situation was very quickly approaching the point of no return, and the United States found it intolerable, in my opinion, based on what Steve and Jared and Pete and others were telling me, Marco, so involved, that I thought that they were going to attack us. I thought they would, if we didn't do this at the time we did it, I think they had in mind to attack us. And
so he's saying that he got advice from Jared Kushner and Steve Witkoff. Kushner is his son-in-law, no formal role in the administration. Witkoff is his personal envoy, not a confirmed role. Matt, these are the two men that were negotiating with the Iranians before. And I don't know if you caught this. There's a report out in MS Now basically saying that they refused to take nuclear experts with them.
Right.
So they didn't have advisors. And so do you think that this is really a war of just utter incompetence in the administration, that they really couldn't understand what the Iranian nuclear program was and attacked based on a threat, simply because they didn't understand what the Iranian position was?
I think that's very likely. And that's you know, what we're hearing from a variety of sources. You know, I mean, the one specific I saw was the Iranian civilian nuclear facility in Bushehr. You know, Witkoff and Kushner couldn't understand that it actually, technically, it cannot produce the uranium needed for weapons. Like that this facility just can't do that. You know, it's like asking an apple tree to produce bananas. You know, it can't do that. So, you know, I think their ignorance, as well as the biases that they bring into this. I mean, I recall not long after Steve Witkoff came on the job, and he went on a tour of Gaza put on by the IDF, and he came back saying, I can't believe this. No one would believe this unless they saw what I saw. And all of us are sitting around just thinking, like, where has he been? What do you mean no one would believe this? You know, and I believe that's the case, though. I believe that Witkoff had never seen the destruction of Gaza until the IDF brought him there well over a year into that destruction. So, I mean, you have these men who are their chief thing is their loyalty to the president, but they also represent his own personal interests. We have to remember there are things about these men like Jared Kushner, the relationship between his family and Netanyahu. When Kushner was a boy, Netanyahu would come and visit his parents. And Netanyahu would sleep in Kushner's bed. You know, Kushner would sleep elsewhere. We're not talking about Epstein here. But like, you know, I mean, Kushner would sleep somewhere else while Netanyahu took his bed. I mean, so you have this is where the information is coming from for the president of the United States to make decisions. And I said before, he's the most malleable president we've ever had. And then so when you have these factors, and then when you have everything else in Washington, D.C. aligned in terms of what advice would come outside of that, whether it comes from the military industrial complex, the fossil fuel industry, just the inertia of American foreign policy of the last 47 years, where Iran, as an article of faith in Washington, D.C., is America's enemy. You know, and then just too, the big thing for me in all this is what empires do. And this war was always going to happen. And it finally just took that we had the right president for this war to happen, the right, you know what I mean? So, this reality, though, that this country and its war are being led by men who know their biases, who know simply what they believe and know nothing else, I think that's exactly what we're dealing with here.
Well, one of those men is certainly Lindsey Graham, and he wants to send his constituents' sons and daughters into this war. Let's hear what the senator recently has to say on Fox News.
Up to our allies, step up, get our air bases out of Spain. They're not reliable. Move all those airplanes to a country that would let us use them when we're threatened by a regime like Iran. To our friends in Spain, man, you have lost your way. I don't want to do business with you anymore. I want our air bases out of Spain into a country that will let us use them. To our Arab friends, I've tried to help you construct a new Mideast. You need to up your game here. I can't go to South Carolina and say we're fighting and you won't publicly fight. What you're doing behind the scenes, that has to stop. The double dealing of the Arab world when it comes to this stuff needs to end. I go back to South Carolina. I'm asking them to send their sons and daughters over to the Mideast. What I want you to do in the Mideast to our friends in Saudi Arabia and other places, step forward and say, this is my fight too. I join America. I'm publicly involved in bringing this regime down. If you don't, you're making a great mistake and you're going to cut off the ability to have a better relationship with the United States. I say this as a friend.
So, Matt, is this a conflict worth sending our sons and daughters to fight?
No. I mean, the reality is Lindsey Graham has never met a war that wasn't worth, you know, someone else's kids going to fight. You know, that's just the warmonger. And he's exhibit A in everything I present to any government around the world as to why the time is now to reconsider your relationship with the United States, whether it be the Gulf monarchies, whether it be the Europeans, whether it be the Japanese, the Koreans, whether it be countries in the global South. This is the time for you to reevaluate and reconsider your relationship with the U.S. empire. That decision that they are going to be forced to make at some point in the future as the United States empire continues to decline, this war has hastened. And so I would utilize Lindsey Graham in that argument. You know, for I would say to Pedro Sanchez, the prime minister of Spain, look, you're leading on this. You're the only European leader speaking out with any type of integrity on this war. And this is your opportunity to set in motion a reaction to this war and to this empire that avoids the prospect of global depression, future wars, and the possibility eventually of a third world war. And Lindsey Graham, as I said, would be my first thing I would show these people as to this is the man who has the ear of the president of the United States, along with mm-hmm. Witkoff and Kushner. We know there are a few people that Trump listens to, and Graham, who he plays golf with, is one of them.
Yeah, it's really concerning, right? Because, you know, it would be almost fun to talk about Lindsey Graham's comments at times because he's such a clown and a buffoon. But here, he actually has a meaningful amount of influence. I mean, there's a lot of reporting that he was kind of acting as a go-between between Trump and Netanyahu and actually coaching Netanyahu on how to sell this war to Donald Trump, including him giving him FDR quotes and how to play like little word association games with Donald Trump. And this is absolutely catastrophic. I mean, of course, Matt, for me and you who oppose war, who want to see the empire, you know, dissolved, right? Bring our troops home, get them out of harm's way. Worst possible outcome. But even for the people who have desires on American empire, I mean, what do you think the Gulf Arab states are going to do after this conflict is over? I bet they're going to look to China and maybe even Russia to form defense pacts with, get the American bases out because their targets in America don't even defend their country. And here, Lindsey Graham thinks he's going to rally them into a war with Iran when they're doing their best to stay on the sidelines. I mean, forget ever fighting a war with China over Taiwan after we've had spent our entire stockpile of interceptors on this needless war in the Middle East. So, I mean, from a military standpoint, Matt, are you surprised that like the chairman of the Joint Chiefs and other people within the chain of command aren't like waving huge red flags and maybe even going to the press saying like, hey, this is really jeopardizing the future of the American military empire?
I think the leadership in the Pentagon has been so heavily curated look, first of all, the leadership in the Pentagon are men and women who went through the global war on terror, the Iraq and Afghan war, rose through the officer ranks by keeping their mouths shut, going along, not butting heads with their bosses, not being contrarian, right? Everything we understand about the reason why Dan Kane is the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, according to Donald Trump, when he met General Kane in his first term, Lieutenant General Kane, Kane, while in uniform, in his Air Force uniform, put on a red MAGA hat. I mean, a massive violation of the code that the United States military supposedly lives by. When C.Q. Brown, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, when Trump comes into office, is fired by Pete Hegseth for no other purpose, as we can tell, besides the fact that he was black, Trump appoints Dan Kane as the new chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. They pull him off of retirement. I mean, so if you look at it, all the generals and admirals who are, you could obviously define as sycophants, weren't sycophantic. They weren't loyal enough for Trump in the White House. They had to bring a guy like Kane off of retirement. So if anyone thinks any type of dissent is going to come from the Pentagon that's going to end this, simply is not. There's no General Shoup that I see, and even General Shoup, who dissented against the Vietnam War, he did that after he retired publicly. But the reality here is you have a very hollow U.S. military, and the idea that somehow we're now going to fight China after this, when we have a Navy that can't come within 300 kilometers of Iran's shores, right? A Navy that got defeated not once but twice by the Houthis, as well as the fact that we have an Air Force, both you know, including the Marines and the Navy, that took 2 weeks essentially to establish air superiority over Iran. I mean, we basically are now just seeing them start to use bombs, JDAMs, meaning that our aircraft are actually over the skies of Iran. It took almost 2 weeks to accomplish that. Yet we're going to go fight China? Really? I mean, so this idea about the American military being anything other than a paper tiger, because we're beating up on a country tactically and operationally that has been sanctioned for decades by the world, that has been isolated by the world, because we're able to drop bombs and launch missiles into thousands, while essentially allowing the Iranians to control the initiative of this war, and certainly allowing the Iranians to achieve their political objectives through their strategy of closing off the Strait of Hormuz and expanding the war regionally. We're going to fight China? Really? You know, I mean, so I think there's a lot of things here that should be very, very concerning. And so when we talk about this war as a great inflection point in history, possibly, as that this is a radical moment, and that where the world goes depends upon how nations react to this war, I don't think we're being hyperbolic. I mean, so we'll see. But this idea that the United States militarily has put itself into another unwinnable war that could eventually turn into a forever war, you know, here we are.
Yeah, I am worried, Matt, that, you know, right now in 100 years when historians are writing about the collapse of the American empire, this is going to be, if not maybe the defining one of the, you know, top moments. It'll have its own section in the kids' history books and things like that. And they'll explain right. How this was a blunder for absolutely no reason that really wrecked the American empire and how the American military functioned. But while we are talking about the military, we saw reports last week that this was presented to some troops. I don't think this was, like, you know, from the Secretary of War or somebody high up in the command, but certainly it seems hundreds of troops heard this message that this is in some ways a Christian religious war, mm-hmm. that this is about bringing back the rapture. Matt, is this something that you experienced at your time in the military, where maybe, you know, kind of religious used in speeches to rally and motivate the troops in times of war? Or is this to you really shocking and concerning?
This is very concerning to me. It's always been there. There's been a certain brand of evangelism in the military. The Air Force seems to be the one where it's most prominent. You'd have individual commanders that would speak in such a way. They would make the war on Iraq or Afghanistan holy. But those were individual commanders. You certainly had moments when Bush called the Iraq War crusade and things like that. But as a matter of policy, and you have, and those commanders did include generals. I'm trying to recall the name of the one general who was very clear about his belief that it was a holy war. By and large, it wasn't policy. But I think in this case, what you're seeing here is an extension of religion of the war as policy conducted in the name of Christian nationalism. Certainly, we see that with Pete Hegseth, his comments prior to becoming Secretary of Defense, as well as his conduct in the last year, show that he has a very deep vein of Christian nationalism that defines who he is. I mean, whether it's his crusader tattoos, whether it's the books he's written, whether it's the words he uses, the way he speaks about such things. So I think just the same way where you have these issues where for the last year, Hegseth and those he has put into office throughout the U.S. military, the generals he's promoted, the generals and admirals he's promoted, including, there is a push to make the United States military a white Christian paternalist nationalist military, right? And there's a whole, we could do a whole episode on that. But I am worried by this because I do feel that this brand of Christian nationalism, while it was always there in the U.S. military, is now becoming institutionalized. And once you start to do that, then there's no end. People can imagine where it can go, right? Rationality, yeah. Logic, reason is excluded. Diversity is seen as wrong. And Christian nationalism becomes the call of the military, the purpose of the military. And, you know, that certainly should scare the hell out of people.
Yeah, it's amazing how many times in this war every accusation is actually an omission where, you know, they say this is a religious war, right? That it's Islam, that it's the Shia that are waging is a religious war against the Jews and the Christians, when in reality, it's far more a, you know, religious Jewish or Christian war, you know, whether you're looking at it from the perspective of the Christian Zionists in the United States, the Mike Huckabee, the Pete headsets, or, you know, the fact that this war was launched either on the first or the last day of Prim, you know, it does seem that for, you know, a lot of people in Israel that they support this war out of a sense of Jewish nationalism and reclaiming, you know, the greater Israel that Mike Huckabee says the Bible gives the Jewish people, where, I mean, I'm sure there is a religious element to it on the Shia side too, especially since we killed one of the highest ranking religious clerics in the entire world for the Shia faith. And, you know, we see fighting going on between Israel and Lebanon because of that. But this war was started far more because of Christianity and Jewish faith versus Islam.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And we see the support for this war in Israel. I've not seen a poll in the last few days, but I don't think it's changed, where you had support for this war among Israeli Jews around 90%, even higher than that. I think about 93%. And what you have, whether I think you could very simply or roughly divide Israel into two halves, those who believe in Jewish supremacy for ethnic reasons, or those who believe in Jewish supremacy for religious reasons. And that's the schism I think you see within Israeli society. And I think that will be the clash that will eventually come to Israel, not anytime soon, but, you know, in the midterm, 10 years or so from now, you know, and that will be Israel's undoing. But within Israel now, there is this understanding that this is what our parents went through. This is what our grandparents went through. This is what our religion teaches us. This is the story of our people. It's always been us against everyone. We've always been surrounded by enemies, you know, whether we're here in Israel or whether we're in a diaspora, right? I mean, so the narrative for this war, you know, I think it just, it strengthens the Israeli population is as resilient as any other population. But when you add into the foundational narrative, the mythologies, the identity of the Israeli people, this war makes very much sense for, again, more than 9 in 10 of them.
Yeah, Matt, thank you so much for your time. I mean, dark subjects that we have to talk about. The future does not look particularly bright, but we do have people like you to help us break this down and understand what's going on in the world, which is absolutely crucial to mounting any kind of opposition to this war in the United States, which, you know, if we ever needed an anti-war moment in this country, you know, we really do need it now. So I appreciate you being one of the true voices of reason and, you know, for all the work you've done, particularly, you know, exposing what a fraud the Afghan war was and how poorly Obama's surge was going to go. So everybody, be sure to check out Matt's work. And Matt, I hope to have you back on the show soon.
Yeah, absolutely. I will say one thing that to close out on that, you know, as you mentioned, the Afghan war, what a bargain that was at $300 million a day. This war is $2 billion a day, they say. So what a bargain the Afghan war was at the $300 million a day mark. But hey, I appreciate you having me on, and thank you very much for what you've been doing for many years now. Thank you.
Before I let Matt go, we do have Daryl Cooper coming up on the show tomorrow, 4:45 Eastern, everyone. Thank you, Matt.
Okay, thanks, Kyle.
Most meal delivery services promise healthy food, but look closer and you'll often find cheap industrial seed oils hiding in the ingredients. Forkful does things differently. Forkful delivers chef-prepared meals made with premium ingredients you'd expect at a great restaurant, from center-cut filet mignon to wild-caught lobster mac and cheese. And every meal is 100% seed oil-free. Instead of canola or soybean oil, Forkful chefs cook with extra virgin olive oil, avocado oil, and grass-fed butter, because better fats make better food. Meals arrive fresh, never frozen, with clear nutrition and ingredient transparency, so you always know exactly what you're eating. Restaurant-quality meals, real ingredients, no seed oils. Discover Forkful today at ForkfulMeals.com.